a discussion about curbing China's AI weapons efforts. Today, January 23rd, 2023. Good morning, early birds. I'm Jonathan Lehrfeld, and this is the Early Bird Brief, produced by Defense News and Military Times. For today's episode, podcast producer Zimon Perez talked with Defense News congressional reporter Brian Harris about mounting tensions with China that have spurred a new push in Washington to lessen U.S. reliance on East Asia for semiconductor production that is needed to create conventional arms and the weapons of the future.
Thank you for joining us today, Brian.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So, most people are very familiar with the CHIPS Act that was passed last year to increase U.S. production of vital chips. But you wrote about something that a little less known about, I guess, which is export controls, essentially, on chip production and, like, the technology that goes into producing these chips. So can you kind of lay out the scope of these export controls the U.S. has placed on China's ability to produce chips or even attain the technology to produce better chips?
Yeah, so basically the Biden administration back in October implemented these export controls on basically curtailing China's access to some of the most advanced semiconductors. It kind of slid under the radar at the time, even though it basically sent the Chinese semiconductor industry into a tailspin overnight. There are a couple components to it. So first of all, the United States itself currently does not produce these advanced chips. There are plans to do so a few years in the future, but that's a separate issue. But what it does do is it produces a lot of the equipment needed to manufacture these chips in other countries. And of course, U.S. companies, along with Japanese and some European firms, particularly in the Netherlands, are some of the leading chip designers. So while the U.S. isn't physically producing them, U.S. technology is integral to the global advanced semiconductor supply chain. So when the Biden administration issued a regulation coming from the Commerce Department's Bureau of Industry Security, it didn't raise a whole lot of attention in the U.S. domestic media. But it basically blocked China from using U.S. equipment to produce its advanced semiconductors in its own country. And it also basically revoked U.S. citizenship for any American citizens who are working for these Chinese companies, which highly depend on U.S. citizens, so they had to quit overnight. And on aggregate, basically what these are intended to do, the export controls are intended to do, is to really stop China from being able to procure these chips to set back their advances in artificial intelligence for at least a decade, if not more. And that, of course, plays into their whole efforts to become a global leader in AI by 2030, which is an integral part of their military modernization efforts, as it is with our military modernization efforts or any modern military.
In the anecdote at the beginning of your story, you did describe President Biden going into this chip factory being built in Arizona with a very catchy slogan, basically just referencing trying to create a resurgence of American manufacturing in the 21st century, yeah. You know, very bread and butter domestic policy stuff. But these chips and the efforts by Washington to control their flow have many more consequences than just the domestic objectives. There are also security objectives with this. So what are government officials concerned about with regards to China and their chip production?
I mean, honestly, the consequences are so vast, it can be kind of hard to pinpoint one thing because there's a whole ocean of things.
But Hit us with it all.
Yeah, I think one thing that might resonate with some of the listeners to this podcast, most of the audience I think would be familiar with JADC2 at the Pentagon, which is basically dependent on AI algorithms to, you know, make military communications more efficient and have, like, AI process these huge, immense amounts of data to make very, like, almost instantaneous battlefield decisions. So China is working on its own version of that, that they call multi-domain precision warfare. And obviously you need supercomputers to produce these AI algorithms. So with these chip export controls, China can obtain these advanced semiconductors that they need to produce for these supercomputers who develop these AI algorithms. So that's, you know, a big military application that these export controls stall. You know, other things, even more relatively mundane things than that, like weather modeling, which has, you know, of course, militaries need to do that, but also what a lot of civilian applications. Space exploration is another thing that you could use for both like purely civilian or military purposes. More dual use stuff. It doesn't just affect like Chinese military modernization, like even things that aren't very related, like vaccine development is hindered.
And some experts are calling these control efforts sort of quasi-containment, I think you referred to it in the article. And containment is familiar with a previous Cold War strategy of stopping the spread of communism across borders into other democratic countries. And so, but they kind of are calling this quasi-containment in this new, what some might call a Cold War with China, but that remains to be debated. Could you go into some more detail of what they mean by that, though?
Yeah, you know, since you mentioned the Cold War, I will mention that a lot of the rhetoric in Washington seems to be ratcheting up a bit, to say nothing of the policy. Like Mike Gallagher, the congressman on Capitol Hill, is leading the China Committee, is framing this in terms of a new Cold War. So, and, you know, by and large, these more hawkish policies on China have a lot of, you know, unquestioned bipartisan support in Washington. But, you know, there are a lot of analysts and experts who are criticizing this policy, as well as this broader idea of U.S.-China decoupling as, like, going too fast and happening too far. And that's where, you know, one of the analysts I talked to, John Bateman, who used to work for General Dunford, the former chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, he basically argued that this is a form of economic quasi-containment because, again, going back to what I was talking about before, which are the dual-purpose technologies, you know, one thing he told me, the White House's Office of Science and Technology is labeling these AI algorithms as basically the foundation of any modern economy domestically within the U.S. So that's why it's important for the U.S. to do it, but you could apply the same thing to China. So going back to things like, you know, yeah, they need AI algorithms to modernize and advance their military, but they also need it to develop vaccines. For instance, you know, China obviously doesn't have the mRNA vaccines for COVID that we do. And that's just like one very specific example of how hampering China's ability to develop this AI hinders their broader economy as well in their ability to develop new technology in addition to the military application. I read an op-ed by someone in Foreign Policy a couple days ago that they're kind of questioning the efficacy of fully divorcing the China and U.S. semiconductor supply chains, because right now, as we saw, the reason why these export controls are effective, at least for the next decade or so, is because they are dependent on our technology to produce their advanced chips. But ultimately, they're going to be moving to wean themselves off our technology, so they're not dependent on it. So in the long term, that's a source of leverage we may be sacrificing. That's another counter argument to this policy.
Yeah, and definitely. And could you kind of describe, like, you know, I think a lot of people in like international relations circles talk about the likelihood of conflict between our two countries, and that one of the main arguments why that might not happen is our economic dependency between each other. So can you kind of describe like that kind of like that decoupling? I know we...
Yeah, and I mean, there is like some tension even with U.S. industry sometimes on decoupling, you know, even within the defense industry. For instance, you know, some people are worried that it's going too fast and not very well thought out to a degree. You know, originally in the NDAA, Senator Schumer was pushing an amendment. It did become law, but the original version of the amendment basically banned U.S. defense contractors from using Chinese semiconductors. But what they were worried about, they were like, well, this is so broad that if we use like a coffee maker that has like a cheap Chinese semiconductor, we can't get a federal government contract. So they changed the language to ban Chinese semiconductors from use in the critical national security systems and extended the implementation period to something like 5 years. And that assuaged a lot of the at least formal public concerns of industry, but that was one example of, you know, the U.S. defense industry feeling like this decoupling was going too fast and then, like, working to scale it back. But even with the new language that became law in the NDAA last year, it still requires these defense companies to start looking very, very far down, like 4 or 5 tiers down on their supply chain. China does produce a lot of these cheap mass-produced semiconductors, even if it isn't producing a whole lot of advanced semiconductors right now. So the U.S. defense firms have to go all the way down their supply chain to look at this, which is something they say is very challenging.
Finally, the U.S. is making moves to curb China's ability to produce, but China isn't taking this lying down. They're instilling their own countermeasures, you've mentioned in your own story. Could you kind of dive into that a little bit?
You know, even before this, all the time in Washington over the past, like, year or two, you've heard this, and rightly so, you've heard this, like, renewed uproar over our dependence, our own supply chain dependencies on China. But, you know, as this whole incident with the export controls illustrates, they have a lot of dependencies on us, and China is, of course, acutely aware of that. So even before that, they were trying, not from my understanding, with not all that much success, to reduce their semiconductor dependencies on our supply chain. But what, you know, what this does is very much accelerates those efforts. So in December, the Biden administration expanded these regulations a bit. They added YMTC, a Chinese semiconductor firm, and like 21 other AI firms to its export control list. And around the same time, Reuters reported this, that they are currently contemplating $148 billion in subsidies for their own semiconductor industry. And even the head of the Bureau of Industry and Security in the Commerce Department, Alan Estevez, he said in September that China will eventually figure this out, even though the export controls set them back. So they're working on it. You know, some of the analysis I've read is that they will be able to do it, but there's always like an opportunity cost, in this case, a fairly significant one. You know, because of the nature of the state control of a lot of their economy, they can and probably will direct a lot of their, you know, engineers and scientists working to work in the semiconductor sector to try to, you know, develop their own technology to produce advanced semiconductors in their own designs, so they're not dependent on, you know, countries like the U.S. for that and our allies.
Definitely. Well, Bryant Harris, Defense News congressional reporter, thank you for joining us. We appreciate it.
All right. Thank you for having me. I'm glad to be here.
That's it for us this morning. To get more of the top stories and breaking news, go to defensenews.com/EBB to subscribe to the Early Bird Brief newsletter. If you liked what you heard, give us a like wherever you get your podcasts. And be sure to follow us on social media @defense_news and @MilitaryTimes. The Early Bird Brief is hosted by me, Jonathan Lehrfeld, and produced by Zimon Z. Perez. If you liked our conversation today, be sure to check out Bryant's story at defensenews.com. Also, please rate us and be sure to leave a comment on whatever platform you use. Our editor-in-chief is Mike Gruss. Have a great day.